Welcome to the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm a heartbroken football fan. With me is Benjamin Solak. Ben, how are you, my friend?
Trevor, everything is delicious. Thank you for asking. I gotta say, though, this is the first pod where both of our teams have lost. And both of them did it in pretty stupid fashion. Listen, J-Jaw, our son of this podcast.
Indeed. Yes,
had
indeed.
Had a game-winning 4th and 15 deep post in his hands. And what did he do with it, Trevor? He put it on the turf. Carson Wentz has two game-winning.
See it.
He has two game-winning touchdown throws with less than like a minute left in the fourth quarter. In back-to-back losses.
Yeah. I didn't get to see a lot of that Lions-Eagles game. I was able to kind of catch some other games around the NFL because I was obviously in the press box, and we're going to get to the press box that I was at and the football game that followed.
Happened in the press box in which you were.
But Eagles end up losing 27-24 to the Lions. Walk me through this one, dude, because
the
I
Lions,
thought this
who
was
are
in
2-0-1 who tied against the Cardinals before beating the Chargers and the very injury beat up Eagles.
Yeah, you got to walk me through this because I thought, you know, I'm looking at the schedule and I'm figuring out, Ben, I'm starting to figure out that what we thought of this football season is not exactly what was going to happen. So tell me what happened in this Lions-Eagles game. How'd the Lions pull this off? What happened?
Right. So very simply, you had an Eagles team was super beat up on all three phases, all three levels of every unit, just make sloppy plays. I mean, they drive down the field, score an opening field goal, and then give up a 100-yard kickoff return touchdown, which, like, it's so hard to give up kickoff touchdowns now with the new rules.
Yeah.
You have to work with that. He was untouched. It was, like, untouched, right? And they have Kamuu Grugier-Hill, Corey Clement, two key special teamers out for today's game. You know, so you have this issue. Okay, so you get the ball back, and they drive down the field, they score another touchdown. The Lions get the ball back, drive down the field, score another touchdown. Ronald Darby's getting burned, you know, like regularly man coverage. He goes down with a hamstring injury that must have happened on the walk to the locker room at halftime because he got burned all game and then all of a sudden had tweaked his hammy. Okay. But anyway, so in that second half, it's kind of punches back and forth. You know, lead is exchanging. Both offenses are moving the ball. And then Miles Sanders, rookie running back. The Eagles are feeding, even though he's inconsistent. He had a problem with fumbles at Penn State, put the ball on the ground twice and lost one of them. The very next drive, after Nelson Agholor had dropped a third down conversion, which he had huge drop issues for his first couple years, seemed to have exercised the demons, and then obviously dropped the game-winning touchdown against the Falcons last week. He catches, makes a football move, and then fumbles with no contact. So it was one of those, like, was that a drop or not? We don't really know. It was called fumble on the field. It was, you know, call stands on review. But nobody touched him. He just caught the ball, put it in his chest, and then dropped it. He has that, and it's returned for, like, 30 yards. At the end of the half, Carson Wentz was the Eagles' third leading tackler with two tackles. Because of the two fumbles.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
So this is where we were, right?
Not only do you not want your quarterback to be recording tackles because that means that turnovers were made, you also don't want your beat up quarterback to be making tackles.
Though, both of the tackles, and I'll find them online, very high quality plays. One of them, like, diving for the near hip. Oh, beautiful.
Okay.
I mean, like,
all right. So I'm literally going to look this up as you're explaining the rest of this.
Listen, Carson Wentz and Tremaine Edmonds are roughly the same size. I've often said this. Anyway,
oh, boy. There it is. That's it. That's the take.
I've said it many times. Anyway, so Eagles defense, honestly, pretty good. Gave up two field goals on short fields, so it was staunch there. Only gave up 7 points in the second half. It was at a bad time. The Eagles had just pulled within three. But they only gave seven points in the second half. Carson, you know, they get the ball back in the second half. They have a couple of punts. They have a couple of good drives. Zach Ertz dropped. Mac Hollins dropped. The Eagles had, depending on how you count it, 7 to 8 drops on the day. They had 3 offensive pass interferences. DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffery are out. The only starting receiver playing is Nelson Agholor. And Agholor is not good. Dallas Goedert is active, but he barely took snaps. You know, he was
active.
Guy.
I thought he wasn't going to be active.
Right, he was active. And then the Eagles had a touchdown drive in which they went six offensive line the whole time. And Dallas Goedert's an incredible run blocker, and they had a backup tackle on there instead of him. They'd rather just go with four pass catching options because, you know, Goddard just simply clearly wasn't super healthy. He had one target, which was a drop in the end zone in the fourth quarter. So all of this coming to pass, the Eagles get 4th and 8 on their own 22. They're down by 3, and Carson Wentz decides to go, or Doug Peterson decides to go for it. 22-yard line, he goes for it. Wentz scrambles for 7, they don't get it. But because Matt Patricia is like captain conservative, run the ball on first down, run the ball on second down, third down, they try a sideline throw, pass breakup. The Eagles are going to get the ball back after this field goal is made.
Mm-hmm.
Down 6, about 2 minutes left, one timeout. So it worked.
Wait. He went for it on his own 22?
Yes, on 4th and 8. Down by 3 with about
3 minutes left. That dude's got some stones.
Yeah, exactly. The theory behind it from what I've been told is knowing that Matt Patricia was just going to run the ball and make the Eagles expend their timeouts.
It was
by going for it on the 22, you're basically inviting the field goal. You're like, listen, I'm going to give you the ball back in field goal range. So just take it and force me to score a touchdown. But as long as I get the ball back, it's worth it.
Right.
And of course, Carson Wentz scrambled for 7. You know, so you
that's actually
it.
Now, pretty damn brilliant. Right? I like that.
It's a bit of a galaxy brain, but it worked. So, I mean, I guess the ends justify the means regardless. So the Eagles are going to get the ball back down 6
mm-hmm.
after they hit the field goal. Here's the thing. Malcolm Jenkins blocks the field goal. Just nice right in through like the outside in front of the tight end. Perfect block. Rasul Douglas picks it up, returns it all the way to the opposite 20. Eagles are in field goal range. Down by 3. This is great. Block in the back. All the way back to the 50. So the Eagles have 1st and 10 on the 50. 1:40 left. One timeout. Just either score a touchdown and win it or score a field goal and send it to overtime. 1st and 10, incomplete pass. 2nd and 10, Mac Hollins drops the first down. 3rd and 10, pick up about 6. 4th and 4, beautiful sideline throw, back shoulder to Darren Sproles on the fade. Offensive pass interference. Bring it all the way back. 4th and 15, Carson Wentz drops back, hangs tall in the pocket, sends an absolute seed down the field to J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. Arcega-Whiteside adjusts perfectly to it. Rashawn Melvin goes flying by, hits Arcega-Whiteside in both hands. I mean, both hands right in front of his eyes. Like, it doesn't get easier.
And Arcega-Whiteside just doesn't drop stuff, man.
Right, and Arcega-Whiteside described it in the end of the game, like, he thought Melvin was going to make contact with him because, like, the ball was a little bit behind. Arcega-Whiteside was able to adjust, and Melvin didn't. And Melvin just, like, whooshed right by him. And so Arcega-Whiteside was like, I was, like, expecting to get hit.
Wait, how are you saying his last name?
He asked, once he became an Eagle, to have the C pronounced, like, with the th, like, in the King Spanish, because that's where he's from. Where he grew up. Like his father's last name.
Fancy.
Yeah.
Arcega-Whiteside.
Arcega-Whiteside, yeah.
Sounds a little odd. I feel odd saying it like that. Like I feel like I'm saying it wrong. But
no, I mean like I mean,
if that's,
too,
I mean if that's how
Arcega-Whiteside and
Arcega-Whiteside
for so long.
To say his name.
But I mean if you find this, it's on Kist's timeline if you find it there, but like you'll see this drop. I mean it's literally at like the 2. You know what I mean? Like it's both hands right in front of his eyes. He's gonna fall into the end zone, or the Eagles are gonna have 1st and goal at the 1, and it's a drop and a 3-point game. So the Eagles are 1-2 with 2 dropped game winning touchdowns. Falcons maybe not.
Oh Lord, I just saw it. Yeah, he thought he was gonna tip it.
This was, but he thought Melvin was gonna like run into him, right? He thought he was gonna
or at least that he was gonna affect the pass somehow, and he literally didn't.
Anyway, so it eats him up, right? Like, he's just not ready to catch it. But this is the 7th, maybe 8th drop of the game for the Eagles. And it ends the game. And so the Eagles have played really good ball in the past 6 quarters,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the first half against the Falcons where everybody was getting injured wasn't good. But, like, Carson and the offense have recovered really nicely to losing multiple starters. And I mean multiple starters, multiple contributors. Jason Peters was down for a little bit in this game. Andre Dillard went down. They held Kalivahti Vaitai in. And you get all the way to this play and you drop the ball. So it's
literally
they're 1-2,
literally
but they're not bad. So
no,
it's like,
no, I don't
a
think
a lot of
Eagles
people are
bad.
Like dreading this game against the Packers. So the Packers are 3-0, and I'm like, they're not bad.
Right? No,
they
no,
just
no.
Need
I
to,
mean,
like, make the last play.
Right, but and we'll segue that into a little bit with the Packers. I think that's just going to be a plain old good game, and you worry about it because if you're the Eagles, you're already behind the 8-ball a little bit in the standings. Whereas, you know, if they were 3-0 or 2-1 or just ahead of the 500 mark, it'd be a little easier to say, like, okay, if we drop one to the Packers. Because we're talking about the Packers today, man. I didn't get to see a ton of that game when it was going on, but I watched a lot of the highlights, and I was looking up the box score to some of the film as well. And boy, Rodgers was hitting some Rodgers-esque throws that game. I mean, the first one where he hit Valdes-Scantling on the free play that he got, and he just let that fly. I mean, is there any quarterback in the NFL better than Rodgers that when you jump off sides, that's just got to be the worst thing? If you jump off sides with Rodgers, you better hope that you're absolutely bowling over the offensive lineman that you are in front of, because if they don't whistle that play dead and you give this guy a free throw, holy cow, he's going to put it on the money. I mean, I thought Rodgers looked great. I thought Andrew Jones looked great as well. I think Jair Alexander, man, is growing up right in front of our eyes.
Jonah Tolles let off the Jair Alexander 2019 All-Pro tweet today.
I mean, I don't know if he's going to get All-Pro. It's going to be a long season, but I'm just so encouraged about a guy who I was so high on coming into the league with so much confidence in the way that he plays the position. I mean, he just straight up ripped that ball out of, I can't remember which receiver it was that he was going up against, that he was guarding, and he goes to tackle the guy down, and he just straight ripped the ball out. The tackle wasn't good enough. Jair's always looking to make that best play. He is such a peak point for that Packers defense, and he's a big guy who can make momentum swings, as we kind of saw there, pairing with that defensive line. And then the other guy I wanted to highlight, Philip Lindsay's freaking awesome, man. Like,
you see Don Reisner throw him into the end zone.
Oh, dude, like, one, Dalton Reisner hive, right?
Did you see Dalton Reisner's tweet?
No, what did he say?
So he quote tweeted, like, a video from ESPN of it, and it says, just like wrangling cattle back home.
Oh, what an absolute hero. Oh, my goodness.
Just like wrangling cattle back home.
What a king, man. Dude, Philip Lindsay's, what he has been over the last 2 years. I mean, he gets two more touchdowns today. Average less than 4 yards a carry, but it was the way that he plays the game. He plays so tough. He's never going to go down on first contact if he doesn't have to. A receiver, a runner, it doesn't matter. He's tough as nails. He's going to get you every single yard he possibly can. And out of a running back in a position that you see guys get hurt all the time. You see teams run through running backs like they're just changing them out. Man, Philip Lindsay is a guy who is dependable, I think, in so many different areas of the game. You love to lean on this guy because you know that he's going to give it everything, every single thing that he has got. I don't know. I think the Arthego Whiteside thing was still in my head, and it was messing with me. But, man, Broncos are 0-3. I know it doesn't look pretty for them. They got screwed over in one game last week. Philip Lindsay is such a bright spot for them.
Right. How over-under week 6.5, Drew Lock's first start.
Well, isn't Drew Lock on IR? Or
is he? Oh, wait, I think you're right, he is.
Yeah, they put him on IR for his shoulder, so he can't come back until week 9 at the earliest.
All right, as I was saying, over under Kevin Hogan, week 6.5. Is he a quarterback too?
I'm not going to freaking play Kevin Hogan.
Though, if I got Kevin Hogan correct,
listen, man.
Brandon Allen.
Oh, Christ. But I mean, like, okay, so that's an 11-point game, right? Are you playing the Packers in Lambeau Field? Rodgers is going off in a lot of different ways. He's hitting a lot of big throws. When I was watching the highlights of that game, and granted, you don't get the full game flow when you do that, but I thought Flacco was dealing on a lot of different stuff. You know, he's 20 for 29 at 200 yards. Yeah, he didn't throw a touchdown. He had a pick. The pick was really weird. It's like he threw it to absolutely nobody. That was super weird, but I didn't think Flacco looked terrible. And with the team that's coached by Vic Fangio, the Flacco should be doing, what I watched from that game, it felt like that he should have been doing enough to get it done. But the problem is, man, the Denver Broncos, Ben, they have zero sacks this year. Zero.
We're three
games in. They got Bradley Chubb, Von Miller, and they can't get a sack.
You know who they don't have, Trevor?
Who?
Shaq Barrett.
Yeah, you want to talk about that game right now?
You want to talk a little bit about four-sack Shaq?
Little four-sack Shaq on him. All right, there's so many layers.
Solder's overrated, yes.
Oh, of course.
Barrett, the inside spin.
Dude, Shaq's got eight sacks through three games.
Trevor, I have one question.
Okay, sure.
is that
this is
good?
this is not the only question you're gonna have about this game. I'm just letting you know.
Yeah, I just want to know, is 8 sacks in 3 games good? I'm not sure.
Yes, it's very good, and especially this four sack performance by Shaq Barrett, and that'll be a good segue into just what in the absolute hell are the Bucks gonna do next week to somehow lose unprecedentedly like they never have before. It is unbelievable. Listen. You listen to me right now, Solak. Okay.
You listen to me good.
This is when you look at this game.
Okay.
Jameis Winston's a very hot and cold quarterback. Can we all agree with this? Okay.
Yes. I would say he's just a cold quarterback.
You never know what you're going to get with Jameis Winston. Yeah, but sometimes then he can hit those throws where it's like, okay, you can win with some of these throws, even if it's only a couple of them. You just never know what you're going to get from him. In the first half, Winston connects with Mike Evans for three touchdowns, okay? This offense was cooking. Ronald Jones was doing what he needed to do, ended up with 80 yards. Peyton Barber was doing what he needed to do. They were relieving the passing game. O.J. Howard showed up for the first time this season. That passing game was rolling. They scored 28 points at half, and that's including 2 missed extra points, so it should have put him at 30, okay? Flip sides of the ball. You get a guy who gets you four sacks in a single game. That is game-changing kind of stuff. And he even had a couple of pressures outside of that. Not only that, I believe 2 of them were strip sacks. One of them was certainly recovered. The other one might have been recovered as well. Then you go to the other...
That one where they called it a pass?
Yeah. I mean, it was closer than I thought it was, but I still thought it was a pass. Go to the other sideline, okay? You have 2 things on each side of the ball for the Buccaneers that should have been X factors for you thinking that they would get out of there with a win. Go to the other sideline. You've got a rookie quarterback, albeit one who dealt really good with pressure when he was in college and did so in the preseason as well, did so again today playing the Buccaneers. It is a rookie quarterback. Todd Bowles and Bruce Arians, when they have been together, 9-0 against rookie quarterbacks in their careers, okay? They held Saquon Barkley to, let me make sure that I get this right here, even before he went out, they held Saquon Barkley to 10 yards on 8 carries, okay? They could not do a damn thing in the run game. Daniel Jones was all by himself. Not only that, but, you know, not that this is like something that you're looking forward to, but they didn't even have Saquon the second half of the game. He was out,
right,
okay? You've got a rookie quarterback with a depleted wide receiver core, no franchise running back, pressure in his face all day, going up against a Bucs defense that is just bringing the kitchen sink to him, and you lose to this team 32-31. Are you kidding me? This is... I cannot believe they found a way. It is so hard for me, as someone who has watched Tampa Bay Buccaneers football for a long time, to be truly speechless at when they lose a game, because I always think that I've seen it all. This was unbelievable. And then to top it all off, Ben.
Yes.
At the end of the game, Bucks let Daniel Jones scamper in for a touchdown to take the lead, 32-31. Okay.
Scamper's a good word.
Not ideal. But they've got a minute 16 left, and they got 1 timeout. Jameis does something stupid and takes a sack on the first play. Okay, not great. Admittedly, not great. Next play, bomb to Chris Godwin. And guess what? As he often does, Ben, Chris Godwin delivers. They get to midfield. Next play, Jameis Winston drops back. There he is, the man he's hit all day long, the man that saved them in the first half. He bombs it. Mike Evans right underneath it. Score. They're right around the 20. Okay. This is it. They've got it. They've got it in the bag. It's a chip shot field goal. This is where it starts to go haywire like I've never seen before. Bruce Arians purposefully takes a delay of game penalty, in which he would later explain after the game was intentional because Matt Gay, quote unquote, kicks better from further distances. Are you kidding me? Then they run the next play. Jameis takes another 2-yard loss to make sure that they set it up on the left hash mark. And Matt Gay pushes it to the right by a distance, Ben, by a distance that would have not mattered had they not purposefully taken the delay of game penalty. I cannot, truly cannot believe it. I sat there in that press box, as my tweet said, speechless, that is how they lost that football game.
That was, if you took the teams out of it and you asked me how which losing team the team was in the NFL, without question, that would be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Without question.
It's the most recognizable Tampa Bay Buccaneers loss in the history of recognizable Tampa Bay Buccaneers losses.
I am going to say, though, Daniel Jones, I thought, played really good. Really
I'm
good
writing about Daniel Jones for tomorrow / today.
Yeah.
Monday, whatever it is.
Really good. Really good in his first start. I'm looking forward to reading your piece on it, hearing what an outsider thought of his film and what he did on that day, because, man, like I said, they were throwing everything at him. And I thought that he performed beautifully. Right. Not only did he perform beautifully, he was pumped up, man. That team rallied around him. He was getting guys hyped when he threw that one touchdown, and then when he obviously ran into the end zone to get the one to take the lead. Man, did that team rally. And the Giants all sprinted. Right. The whole team sprinted onto the field at Raymond James Stadium when the Buccaneers missed that field goal.
The shot in the arm that you get from finally moving on from Eli for like a legitimate person is great. And the thing with Jones is that, number one, being completely unaware of pressure has its problems, i.e. when you put the ball on the ground 2-3 times when you're getting sacked, when you're regularly fading back and helping pressure arrive because you're struggling to manage the pocket. But also, I mean, Daniel Jones is unafraid of throwing into pressure, mostly because it seems that he has no idea that it's there. Like, he's just agnostic of it. Again, it has bad parts to it, but there are so many plus throws against pressure because he's getting pure man coverage behind it, where Jones is like, yes, I'm about to get lambasted, but I don't even notice. So I'm just going to deliver this ball down the field.
No, Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he put some really nice balls out there, especially against pressure, which could be a huge deterrent for rookie quarterbacks. So that was impressive. And then I saw a lot of, I don't know, I think this is a point worthy of clarification, and then I want to get to Kansas City, Baltimore.
Yeah.
But I saw a lot of people saying, like, oh, we got to delete the Daniel Jones, you know, receipts. And he played, like, better than I remember him playing at Duke, and I was not a fan of his coming out of Duke. And if he plays like this for the remainder of his rookie season, yes, I will have been too low on him. But listen, we were not, at least in my part, we were not making fun of Daniel Jones when Dave Gettleman had been selected him. I mean, we were obliquely, because we didn't think Daniel Jones was worth the 6th overall pick, especially relative to the fact that you had guys like Dwayne Haskins still on the board. You had guys like Drew Locke still on the board. But yeah, when Daniel Jones went 6, when I was getting jokes off, it was only adjacently, secondhand at Daniel Jones' expense. The jokes, which remain entirely valid, independent of what Daniel Jones did.
They were Gettleman jokes.
Is that Dave Gettleman drafted Daniel Jones at 6, despite the fact that nobody, and we're nearly positive, nobody wanted Daniel Jones that high. And they had the quote a couple days ago, which was that, oh, the Giants loved Daniel Jones, and they also wanted to get a pass rusher. They wanted to trade up to get Josh Allen. Well, you should just draft Josh Allen 6, because Daniel Jones still would have been there at 17, brother. So that's, to me, that's the funny bit, is Gettleman's team building made him pass on Sam Darnold, pass on Josh Allen, pass on Lamar Jackson, pass on Josh Rosen to draft Saquon Barkley, and then he subsequently drafted Daniel Jones at 6, and I think that's an objectively bad process.
Yeah, it's just a weird process.
Totally. Of what Daniel Jones becomes. Speaking of Lamar Jackson,
yes,
this is my favorite football player in the league. I don't care. I don't care, Trevor. Did you see the 4th down with Mark Andrews? Please tell me.
I probably did, but I was watching highlights of it, so I might not have gotten full context of it.
I am DMing you
a
GIF. Right.
Okay.
And this GIF, for context,
is this the play? I'm hoping this is the play.
Yes, this is the play.
I'm hoping it's not just like a LOL GIF.
No, but so I want you to watch it. No, wait, don't watch it yet. Don't watch it yet. Are you ready?
Okay, sure. Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, it's 4th and 2. Lamar is scrambling outside of the pocket. Uh-huh. And he clearly, off the TV copy, when you're watching it, has enough room to get to the 1st down. This GIF that you'll see is from...
Oh, yeah, the hands-up one. Okay. Yes. You should have just said the hands-up one.
I wasn't sure. If you hadn't seen it, I didn't want to spoil it for you.
No, I did.
This is the best play in modern NFL history. I need you to understand. Since the merger, No greater plays next year. Immaculate Reception just took number one overall in the NFL 100's top 100 plays in history. It has now been it has been replaced by this play. For those of you who have not seen it, go to my timeline. You can find it. I quote tweeted it. Lamar Jackson is scrambling on 4th and 2. And from the TV copy, as you watch him, when he has yet to cross the line of scrimmage, he'll clearly get it. But when he has yet to cross the line of scrimmage, he throws his hands up in a very perplexing sort of like touchdown sort of like, you know, motion figure, and then proceeds to get the first down. And you're not really sure why until you see this angle. Mark Andrews, as receivers are taught to do, had thrown his hands up in the back of the end zone so as to indicate, hey, I'm open, throw the ball to me. But Lamar has already committed to running. So in response to Mark Andrews throwing his hands up to attract his quarterback, Lamar just throws his hands up right back at Mark as if to say, nope, I've got this one. I'm open. Screw you. And it's the funny. He's running at full speed in a live actual play. He's being chased down by defenders and takes the time to tell Mark Andrews via emotion
incredible.
That
he's not incredible.
In his receivers that he's going to run this ball for the first down. This is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. There was like a 3rd and 15 where Lamar literally just chucked it all the way across the field, across his body, completely Hail Mary into just traffic, and Willie Snead came down with it. There was a scramble play where Lamar, like, did a 360 in the pocket. Like, his back was facing the defense. He, like, bailed out of the back and then just, like, flipped it backhand to Mark Ingram for, like, an 8-yard gain. The dude is unhinged. Oh, my – there's no way this play is sustainable. It's not healthy. It's probably not good. God forbid he gets injured. The offense is always going to be up. And I don't care. Do you have any – defenses must watch his film on Monday or Tuesday and be like, mother of God, I'm going to sleep so good after I defend this player. Plays last 9 seconds with him back there. And he's willing to throw it anywhere. Like, as a defender, the mental work and then the physical distance you have to run covering Lamar, and Mahomes has the same effect. I think the two of them are the only in the league. Rodgers does not have this. The amount of effort they take to defend for 4 quarters, especially as we get later into the season, into the playoffs, nightmare. Oh, nightmare. Lamar is so fun to watch. He didn't have the best game throwing the ball. He had a couple of bad mistakes, and then he had a couple of bad drops by his receivers, you know, missed opportunities from his receivers. But, man, overall, like, I was impressive. Lamar has lost 2 starts in the regular season. They've both been against the Chiefs, and they've both been relatively close games, in which Mahomes, as he was this week, was just paramount.
Yeah, no, I agree. We were watching two of the best teams in the NFL, I thought, today. And it's because of the two guys who are playing quarterback with him. I thought Lamar was really good, and I think there's certain differences between Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, but I think the big one in this game was that, and I watched this a couple of times, Lamar has improved so much when hitting guys in stride on, like, in-breaking routes, right? I mean, you like slants or post or just in routes right over the middle. I've noticed that he's really hitting these guys in stride with good accuracy this year better than he was last year. He's still working, I think, in those over-the-top-of-the-zone touch passes. There are a couple passes when they were running either 4 verts or just a seam with a tight end where he either sailed or just missed on a couple of those, and those are the ones that Mahomes hits, right? Those are the ones right over the linebacker level, in between where the safeties are covering you. You got two guys on the outside burning, so you're stretching the safeties a little bit in their deep zone, and you just drop one right over the linebacker into a guy like Travis Kelce, or, you know, the Ravens have plenty of tight ends to do this over the middle as well. Mahomes hits those passes where you just go, damn it, what am I supposed to do? What are we supposed to do? How are we supposed, if he can hit this throw with this coverage with guys like DeMarcus Robinson and Mecole Hardman and Tyreek Hill when he's out there, you know, like, what the heck am I supposed to do? Where are we supposed to give up yards? That's the next step for Lamar, is I think those seam passes, hitting those with regularity with touch. If you start seeing Mahomes, or if you start seeing Lamar Jackson do that, and if he gets to do that and progress throughout the year, there's a chance that this is the AFC Championship game, right? I mean, like, there's a chance that one of these can spoil the Patriots down the stretch, because I think that you're right. What both of these quarterbacks command a defense to do for 60 minutes is so tough this year. And you notice too, man, I know Mark Ingram got a lot of the running, but, like, this team is a run-based team, but when they pass and Lamar can pass the way that he's been so far this season, they are a good football team.
Sure. And I think, like Lamar is absolutely 100%, there is no question, a functional NFL quarterback throwing the football.
Without a doubt now.
Without a doubt.
Come on.
But this would be the only team where I would say, hey, like, I really think you might want to consider increasing the amount you run the football, because the best success they had consistently against the Chiefs defense, and obviously, again, Lamar played a good game, made good passes, when they go pistol, they go H-back, and they get Ingram moving, and they threaten with a Lamar run, I mean, that's a bear. That nobody wants to deal with that. And Marquise Brown has been a little bit quieter, obviously, since the first week where he blew up against Miami, but the thing is, like, you have to when the Ravens present those H-back sets, those two tight end sets with 6-7 blockers in the backfield, and then a running back and then Lamar threatening to throw, you have to get bodies in the box, and that makes you have to go single high. Marquise Brown's going to be a lot of corners against single high. Safeties are not going to be able to get there. So that's the formula to me, I think, is the Ravens need to – the offensive approach I would take would be loading the box and establishing the running game to throw deep.
Yeah.
And that's, I think there's one team to which that applies in the league, and that's the Ravens.
I think, man, when the Ravens start doing that a little bit more, and then again, when Lamar hits those touch passes right over zone, when you suck guys in and he really hits those with a little bit more regularity, because not that he hasn't hit those yet this year, I've seen him do it, just hitting it a little more often, and you can start getting defensive coordinators to throw their hands up in the air and be like, okay, what are we supposed to do against this guy?
And speaking of defensive coordinators throwing their hands up in the air.
Yes.
The Ravens are probably one of the best defenses consistently year to year. Mm-hmm. So they're probably one of the best defenses just in the general, like in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. And then their passing defense was tremendous last year. And they added Earl Thomas. They retained the same coordinator. They still got good pass rushers. Patrick Mahomes averaged over 10 yards per attempt, completed almost 80% of his passes, had 3 touchdowns and no interceptions. There's no chance. There's no chance. And the Ravens did this. Every opportunity the Ravens had for points, fourth down in the red zone, fourth down in their own territory, they went for it. Because and Harbaugh was very plain about it. We need to score points. We're going to beat the Chiefs. Like, like, you cannot go into a Chiefs game being like, all right, you know, we can win scoring less than 30. No, you just can't. You're like, if you're going to beat the Chiefs, it's going to be in a shootout with lucky breaks at the end. Very simple. Patrick Mahomes, in his first 3 games this year, has thrown for at least 370 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. In back-to-back-to-back games, only one game did he have Tyreek Hill. But Trevor, Rodgers only has 4 such games in his career with those numbers. Mahomes has done it in the past 3 games. Rivers has 5. Brees has, I don't know, Favre has 3. Marino has 3. Ryan has 4. These are coming from Scott Kaxmar, who used to be a Football Outsiders. Well, against the Ravens! There's no better defense!
They're balling, man. They're balling.
He might be a good football player.
We'll go a little bit rapid fire here to end out the podcast. Our son, Teddy Bridgewater, getting the W in Seattle. Yeah. That was awesome to see. Alvin Kamara continues to be, man, special.
You want to shout out another son of the podcast?
DeKalen?
No, not DeKalen. DeKalen had the incredible catch to end the second half there, where the Seahawks took 2 timeouts.
Okay, hold on. I'm trying to think who would. It's another son in this game?
Not in this game.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. I guess we're just moving on. Which game
we're
is
going
it?
Rapid fire?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Which game are we going with that has a son?
Buffalo, Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. Who is our son? Our son. Is this obvious? Should I know this?
Yes. No. When it was you and John in the summer before the 2018 season, nobody stood for this player harder. And then I, more so than Kyle and Joe, was also a fan of this player come draft time.
Okay, who is it?
Dawson Knox, brother.
Oh!
Dawson Knox. 3 receptions, 67 yards, and a touchdown.
First touchdown since high school.
First touchdown since his freshman year of high school or something like that. 2014.
No, junior year, but yeah.
Junior year. And then, but the catch and the run where he took Jesse Bates, and there's going to be a Jesse Bates tree on the 30-yard line of that stadium in 20 years because he planted that young man. Oh, my heavens to Betsy. We're rumbling. Yeah. Dawson Knox is a rumbler too. He is not. He's an athletic man, but he's not like a cut man. He's a country grown boy. Now, that old Miss product. I mean, Knox is a tremendous athlete on a Bills squad that had no competition at tight end. And he and Tommy Sweeney are regularly getting out on the field on two tight end sets and both playing well. And Dawson Knox scored his first touchdown in like 5 years.
Bills 3-0, huh?
Imagine throwing the ball to Dawson Knox 27 times in college. Imagine.
I mean, I get that Ole Miss had a lot of really good wide receivers, but
Bills 3-0 against the Patriots in week 4, I believe at home. Ask me what the line is. Guess what the line is.
So the Bills are at home.
Yes.
I bet the Patriots are favored by 3.5.
Oh no, 6.5 is the line that I saw.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
Yeah, this is you wanna make a statement that the AFC East isn't a kickover anymore.
No, go out and beat New England. Come on. We're all rooting for you, Buffalo. We are Bills Mafia this week. Falcons Colts.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Falcons Colts. Jacoby Brissett can get it done. My takeaways from this game were, one, Jacoby Brissett can get it done for you. There was one play. It was the touchdown to, God, who'd he hit in the corner? I don't remember. But he pump faked a swing pass to get the corner to freeze just for a second and then immediately went to the corner route that was going to the end zone. And it left the guy wide open. It was beautiful. It was beautifully executed. I thought Brissett was very confident in this game, as he has been for a while. And I think he can get it done.
I saw very little of this game. The only thing I have to say really for this is Julio Jones has 3 receiving touchdowns in 3 games, which has to be the most productive touchdown streak of his career.
Yeah. Also, I think Marlon Mack's a stud.
I'm still like, I'm
coward.
Okay. He's a good player who I just think still leaves meat on the bone. I really do. Maybe this is just like the poison of still watching Miles Sanders just make super unnecessary bounces and cuts. But Mac just wants to hit a home run on every play. And sometimes get back Marlon, get 5 and go home.
If Marlon Mack played for the Eagles, he'd be your favorite player ever.
I mean, like, Miles Sanders is killing me. All right.
Patriots Jets, I will just say this. The game recaps of all of the games in the NFL are usually 10-minute clips on YouTube. They can usually condense it down a little bit. This one was 7, 3 whole minutes shorter, which I just figure is because the Patriots curb stomped him. And that was
they did.
That was about it. By the way, for everybody listening to the podcast, I was not able to find a place that would let me parlay the Jets and the Dolphins for 25K at the original time that we talked about it. So I did not bet it, but I do have, but I did upload the funds. I uploaded the funds. So I've got $100 in the chamber ready for the next unbelievable bet that I've got to cash in on. I did not watch Vikings Raiders at all. Like, not a single clip. Did you?
Never. Oh, God, no. All I saw was the Dalvin Cook multiple incredible.
Okay, Dalvo's together, stud.
Stringing together multiple moves, you know, incredible joystick with power. Dalvin Cook was good. Dalvin Cook was good, and he ran a 4.5 40, and people thought that was bad. He was 1/100th of a second too slow to have a 40 that was a 4.4 something, and people thought he was bad. Also, in unbelievably egregious combine take Hall of Fame, it turns out, Trevor, that Orlando Brown is still good at football despite being really bad at preparing for the NFL combine. In shocking news, blocking is not really conditional on the 40-yard dash. He had a great game from what I saw against the Chiefs. And just to the point on the Jets and the Patriots, never, never, never forget.
Yes.
Never forget, Trevor.
Yes, yes.
That Luke Falk was a rumored first-round sleeper in the 2018 NFL draft. Mm. Never forget this.
Carolina Panthers went up against the Arizona Cardinals, and
we might have to start spamming Kyle Allen, my friend.
Listen, Kyler Murray had 173 passing yards on 30 passes.
Now, Trevor, I'm getting something from the booth here. The producers are telling me that's not good. Actually bad.
That is what, 6 yards? Yeah. Yeah, that's a little less than 6 yards a clip.
Yes, sir.
Sweet Jesus. Kyle Allen, on the other hand, 19 passes, 4 of them touchdowns, 216 passing yards. Christian McCaffrey had 153. Rushing yards, good lord. Okay, I guess Carolina is better with Cam Newton. Kyle Allen, better than Newton, as we all expected. The next game, Deshaun Watson getting the dub, bringing Houston to 2-1. They beat the Chargers. They dropped to 1-2, 27-20. Ben, did you watch any of this game? Deshaun had 350 and 3 TDs.
I did not, but I will say, from things that I've seen obliquely out of the corner of my eye from the clips that I caught, Northern Illinois tackle Max Sharping was not good at tackle. And he was simply, listen, this guy has everything you need to play guard. Just kick him inside. And the Texans drafted him. They kicked him inside. And he looks a lot more comfortable at guard at the NFL level than he did at tackle. I think that's good news for the Texans. Trevor, did you catch any Sunday Night Football?
I didn't hold on. I was going to say that this was a classic Keenan Allen game. He had 13 receptions for 180 and 2 touchdowns. That's like old school fantasy football Keenan Allen game. Good for you,
Keenan. Classic Keenan Allen game in that he was utterly dominant in all three levels of the field and produced insanely. Classic Keenan Allen.
I did not see any of the Sunday Night Football game. I see the final score. The Rams beat him 20-13.
Yeah. So, firstly, the Rams continue to look like mortal.
Oh, brother, I can't wait for Tampa to go into L.A. next week and win, and me just go, I don't understand this game.
Right.
Can't wait. Cannot wait.
Absolutely. I mean, and so it's funny because a lot of what the Patriots did on defense against the Rams is being kind of reduxed. You know what I mean? You're seeing a ton of 5-6-man fronts. You're seeing a ton of 2 players, 3 players in between the guards, in between the tackles, just occupying a ton of those interior lanes, and then putting stand-up backers on the outside, hand down guys on the outside, and just making sure that you clog up that wide zone flow. And the Rams have answers to it. They're doing different things, but it's not what the offense is built off of. You're kind of taking away the centerpiece, and so the ancillary stuff still works. I think Goff is honestly like playing better in terms of rolling out and hitting guys on the move outside of the pocket that I can remember him doing, which is huge for this team if he's able to move his launch point more consistently. But he also made just multiple dumb picks in the end of the game, which is some inaccurate throws he shouldn't have attempted. It's like, okay.
Good
Lord. He's kind of still...
Todd Gurley led the team with 43 yards? That's it?
Yeah. And
so, this team's not going to be that good if they can't run.
The thing is, like, they've won games, but they have looked far from, you know, like, the best team in the NFC right now in terms of how they've looked is the Packers. Like Saints.
No, it's honestly an interesting matchup next week because the Bucs defend the run really, really well. So the Rams are not going to be able to run the football, I don't think, if history so far this season tells us anything. And Jared Goff's going to have to beat them with his arm, which he can do because the Bucs blow coverage a lot. But, I mean, it'll be interesting. Either Goff's going to go off for like 300, 400 yards, or the Bucs might actually have a chance to win this game. All right, was that all of them?
Yeah.
Did we get to all of them?
No, I just a note on the Browns. Yes. Who I'm probably, even if I can't get a publish out of it, I'm going to watch some Baker and figure out what's going on. But I
was told the play calling has been weird.
Well, so the play calling has been like not great. There's no doubt about that. And Freddie Kitchens is the head coach, and he's also calling the plays. That can be a lot of a load. You know, you want to be able to manage the game first, and maybe, you know, you have Todd Monken, who — this is a Todd Monken podcast, friend of the pod, has been on the show many times, Todd Monken.
big shout out.
Let's just say those things. Let's just say things out loud. People won't check us.
Yeah, probably will.
So you might want to be delegating play calling for that reason, but all play calling things aside, I mean, Mayfield's trying to get 90 yards on every play. Mayfield's trying to extend every play. He's trying to get outside of the pocket and make magic happen on every play. And this is a not a surprising development for a second-year quarterback, especially one with Mayfield's skill set and with his disposition. But he needs to be, like, if there's nobody on the offensive coaching staff who Mayfield respects enough that they can get in his grill and, like, kind of rein him in, then that's, number one, a huge problem just for the coaching staff. But whoever that person is simply needs to get in Baker's face a little bit and be like, listen, stand in the pocket and throw the football. Because Baker's just bailing every pocket he gets. I mean, the pocket management at Oklahoma was one of my biggest concerns with him. And then in his first year in Cleveland, it looked improved, and we really look not like we've not only regressed, like we've submarined. There's just so much, and it's not even like panic. It's just, I don't know. He just like feels better outside than he does inside. Maybe you start designing and scripting more rollouts or whatever. But Mayfield is to me, Mayfield's play right now is the bigger issue than play calling. And better play calling would help. Better offensive line play would help. Better everything would help, of course. But this is a Mayfield problem, and somebody needs to, you know, get him on it. And this Browns team has very few veterans. There's no more Joe Thomas. There's no more Kevin Zyras. There's no more like old.
Yeah, it's them. It's those guys.
Yeah, they're not there to be there. There's no established veteran quarterback who's been there for ages who can kind of get in Baker's face about it. Like, I don't think he would. I don't know the relationship, but I don't think he would respond positively to having a guy like a Garrett Gilbert, his backup, getting in his face. You know what I mean? And then like, it's Freddie Kitchens and it's new offensive coordinator and Todd Monken. Like, who's going to be the guy here to be the veteran to tell Baker kind of how to steady things here? Because somebody needs to kind of rein this Bronco in.
Only okay, nice. Not a Bronco. We're talking about the Browns, but okay.
Rein this Bulldog in.
Would be remiss if we didn't mention that the San Francisco 49ers are now 3-0 after beating the now 0-3 Pittsburgh Steelers 24-20.
Of all time.
It is a really weird 3-0. The Bucs game was super weird because there was the two pick sixes. This game was super weird because Jimmy had more interceptions than his touchdowns, but Mason Rudolph is bad. So, hey, you know, it's just a what?
He had some flashes, Mason did. I really thought so.
Okay, so great. He's Jameis.
Listen, I mean, it's worse things than your backup being Jameis.
What'd you say?
I said there's worse things than your backup being Jameis.
As someone who has had to watch Buccaneer football over the 4 years that Jameis has been here, you don't want that. You really don't. But Mason doesn't have the Buccaneer curse looming over his head. Jameis does. Tough to overcome curses. Really is. Take it from a guy who would know a thing or two about it. That's all for the NFL recap that we got in this episode. We're turning the page to college football recap tomorrow. Had plenty of games that went on Saturday. Ben and I we both had game day shifts. I was basically around watching all the games all Saturday, so I got some takes to get off. I got some views to get off. We're going to get to all the awards, the Thick Boy Award of the Week, which is a good one. Ben and I wholeheartedly both agreed on the Thick Boy Award.
On the nominee for Thick Boy of the Week.
Yes, we're going to have
the
best.
Me, I have something special planned for Thick Boy of the Week, so you don't want to miss Tuesday's podcast.
We're going to have best thing we saw in scouting, best thing we saw over the weekend, what made us freak out a little bit. I've got to atone for my UCF take sins. It's all coming up tomorrow on the podcast. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.